WBTV's Good Question is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network. Listen to your city at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
There are now millions of them available. People around the world listen to them, and you can find them on Spotify and Apple. No, we're not talking about songs. We're talking about podcasts.
You don't need, you know, a $5,000 studio with nice microphones and cameras and things like that, you know, to record something to be successful, as long as you've got something interesting to say.
In this episode, we're speaking with the creator of the Queen City Podcast Network, the man who produces this podcast, asking him about the future of the industry. This is WBTV's Good Question. Welcome to WBTV's Good Question. Alex Giles here with my colleagues Jamie Bull and Jack Vandertol. We are recording this in March of 2022, and this month marks 1 year that we launched the Good Question podcast, so it's fitting.
It has? It's been a year?
It's been a year. Isn't that wild?
That is crazy.
It is. It's fitting. That
time flies.
Time does fly.
Especially in this business.
It does. Today, we have Brian Baltashevitz, the founder of the Queen City Podcast Network, the man who makes this podcast and so many others in the Charlotte area possible, and helps put them together and roll them out so that the public can listen to the great things that folks like us have to say and report on. So, Brian, wanted to actually have you come from behind the scenes, sit down with us at the table today, and talk about podcasts, this industry, this art form, and how you got into it. So first things first, explain how you became interested in podcasts.
Sure. So I always loved radio. Growing up as a kid, I just loved radio. Mm-hmm. And growing up, I've told really long versions of this story on other shows, but I'll keep it as short as I possibly can. As a kid, again, I loved radio. Really wanted to get into radio. That would have been kind of where I really would have loved to have spent my career. Now, thank God I didn't. But I developed a stutter, and it was very severe. It was much, much worse than it is right now. And so that was really kind of, well, you know, it doesn't seem like radio will be possible. But I started writing, and I became a halfway decent writer. And then got into college and discovered that I could combine broadcast television with writing, and I could work behind the scenes as a producer and get other people to say the things that I wrote and still have a voice in this medium that I really love so much. So and flash forward a few years, I started working in television as a producer. And in Arizona, I was calling collegiate hockey games on the ESPN radio affiliate in Tucson, Arizona, for the University of Arizona club hockey teams. Now people think club hockey, there's 12 people in the crowd, you know, who would listen to that on the radio. But in Arizona, there's enough transplanted Midwesterners who still want to see hockey that it's a big deal. We would draw 12,000 fans for the U of A ASU games.
That's crazy.
For club hockey.
What?
It was nuts. Who would have thought? It was absolutely insane. So we did those games on the radio. And then 1 year, the University of Arizona was hosting the national championship tournament. And so I was working with the Arizona Daily Star to stream. And again, remember, this is like 2000. Okay, so this goes way back before desktop computers had speakers, before there were, you know. So
I remember what you're talking about, Brian. So, the others may not.
So we approached the Arizona Daily Star, which was the daily newspaper in Tucson, about live streaming the whole tournament. So 16 games in 4 days. And they said yes, to their credit. And most people, by the way, still had dial-up. So we literally had to dial up with a modem to connect to the Daily Star. It was absolute madness.
Looking back on it, right?
Yeah. It was just insane.
You had to want it.
100%. So through the 4 days of the tournament, we crashed the Arizona Daily Star's website about half a dozen times. And that was really when I started, you know, I kind of started to think there might be an appetite for this type of content online, and is it possible? So this is again, 22 years ago. So flash forward a few years, I did a daily sports talk program through the Arizona Daily Star. Again, I pitched this thing to them and they said, yeah, let's do it. And so that existed solely online as a streaming thing that you could download. I started doing post-game reports from football and men's basketball games from the arena. As soon as the buzzer went off, I would record, you know, the Arizona Wildcats knock off whoever, or if it was, you know, in the case of the football team, the Arizona Wildcats lose to whoever. And those started, you know, to gain some traction. So now I'm really thinking this has legs. This is a viable thing. So flash forward a few years, 2006 or so, Clear Channel has their purge of talent, and a bunch of my friends had lost their jobs in the there were really two Clear Channel purges, like 2005, 2006. And they let, you know, a whole bunch of talent go across the country. And so I brought a bunch of my friends together, most of which were former Clear Channel talent, and said, well, what if we form a network of shows? It wasn't even called podcasts at the time, but just a network of pre-produced shows. You know, you guys can still, Jonas and Andy can still do their morning show for 1 hour a time, instead of 20 hours a week or whatever it is, you know, that we're doing, but they can keep in touch with their audience. You know, they can book really cool guests because they've got this black book from when they were still on the air. And then that kind of worked. So we had at one point 18 shows a week. Wow. We were getting about 150,000 downloads a month.
Wow.
And this is really early.
Yeah.
It was right about the time that, Adam Carolla launched his network. The difference is, of course, he's Adam Carolla. And we were not, but, and so then, my wife and I relocated, and I'm skipping a whole bunch of stuff, but my, wife and I relocated to Charlotte in 2010, and I brought that network with me. And then I realized that, you know, radio guys want to do the shows and the fun part, but they don't necessarily want to do the marketing and, or the I'm telling people to have a show or whatever. And at that time it was a little bit weird with podcasting too, because it was kind of like, you know, it wasn't what it is now. We're like, it's more of a form of mainstream media now than it was.
Everybody knows about them.
Yeah, 10 years ago, where now it's like, oh, you have a podcast? You know, it was, it was kind of funny. So, and then, Radio Exiles, which is what we call the network, shut down in 2012, I believe. And then I did some shows with the Sporting News, who was headquartered here in in Charlotte, and they were really kind of back in the day the first real sports talk radio. Sporting News Radio was kind of one of the first networks with Papa Joe Chevalier.
Yeah, and, I remember him. Sure,
and all those guys, right? And so I was really kind of I'm talking with them about kind of bringing that brand back, and they just never really got behind it. And so I moved on from the Sporting News and then went to the Comedy Zone in 2015 and said, hey, what if we do a show? So I'm really kind of just like, you know, slinging my wares around town, just trying to see like somebody, you know, is going to see the value in this and eventually it's going to work. And so we started, like now every comedy club in the country has their own podcast, but in 2015 that wasn't the case. And so the Comedy Zone was really the first comedy club in the country to have its own podcast. And then Bob Saget was our first guest in May of 2015. And, you know, and then I thought, well, okay, so maybe there's something local. And so I brought five local shows together. Was already producing two of them, that Comedy Zone podcast and the Yelp Charlotte podcast, and then talked to the Charlotte podcast and Cheer Charlotte Radio and Creative Loafing's Local Vibes, which was a local music podcast, and thought, let's see what happens, you know, on the local level, because everybody launches a podcast wants to be, you know, global and they want to be Joe Rogan. Is there, you know, a space locally for this to work? And so everybody cross-promoted each other's podcasts. Everybody's numbers spiked. Creative Loafing's numbers tripled. And so now we have a thing. And so then we just kept kind of adding shows. Got approached by Ortho Carolina after only 6 months to be the title sponsor. And then that was really kind of, you know, that led to kind of where we are now with 37 shows on the network. And so that's the short version sorry about that. But it's I think to appreciate, and for me at least, to appreciate where we are now, I have to remember that crashing the Daily Star's website, literally streaming online from a wire hanging from the ceiling of the Tucson Arena, you know, calling those hockey games back in the day. You know, that was really kind of the start of it.
Well, it's kind of interesting, too, because you were talking about radio, right? And that was sort of, the start for you. And you probably were this way, too, right? As a kid, around the AM dial, seeing what faraway stations, right, that you could pick up, listening, you know, the kid in Wisconsin growing up, I'd listen to St. Louis Blues hockey, on KMOX, because it went clear. A lot of people can pick up WBT here in Charlotte, all up and down the East Coast. And that sort of just, the imagination takes off with that. But this, with the internet connections and all this, it just makes it so much easier.
Yeah. I was that kid in elementary school listening to WJR, the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, AM 760.
Right.
You know, and it was all talk. And I was that dork in elementary school listening to J.P. McCarthy talk about whatever it is he was talking about.
Larry King back in the day, overnight show. People forget about his overnight radio show that he had, right?
They had Detroit Tigers baseball, Detroit Lions football. They had the Red Wings. It was all about WJR growing up. And you know, WRIF. Classic. It was new rock at the time. It's classic rock now, I guess. But it was just all about radio, man. Mm-hmm. It was just the greatest.
Your story was being laid before you even realized it.
Yeah, yeah. It's not lost on me either that because I grew up with this stutter, and this is a whole other podcast. But you know, because I grew up with this thing where I couldn't put two words together. I just came to the realization fairly recently as I was putting a presentation together about kind of how we got here and how I got here, that how important the spoken word was for me, because I so desperately wanted to do this thing that other people could do, you know, which explains, I think, why I was fascinated with what these people can do. And now, you know, I've built my career giving people a voice, and you know, it's much better now. But it's not necessarily lost on me that one thing led to another. Mm-hmm. You know,
how challenging has it been along the way? Because it sounds like you've had this vision for decades. Challenging has it been to make this your life's work?
Yeah. Waiting for podcasting to catch up has been a bit of a challenge. You know, I always, especially in those first, the first time that we crashed a major newspaper's website, I was like, that's kind of interesting. And I know, I mean, you know, at the time it maybe took 150 people trying to connect at the same time to crash the website, but that was really the first time that I went, you know, this is it. People want to listen, and they want to work really hard to get to listen, because it took effort at the time. So kind of waiting for, I'm going to hesitate even still to call it the industry, but kind of waiting for the industry to catch up with what I always kind of thought it could be, has been a bit of a, you know, I went 18 years before I made a dime doing this. So much credit to my wife, who never looked at me and said, "What the hell are you doing?" You know what I mean? Because, like, what? Why are you doing all these things? But in addition to having, you know, a full time job in broadcast television throughout the entire time, so it's been a bit of a waiting game. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to be really, really patient for things to kind of catch up. But I always it succeeded everything that I thought it would be. You know. As an industry,
I was just about to say, fair to say, you always thought podcasts were going to become popular, but are you even surprised at how big some podcasts are nowadays?
Yeah. I thought it could become popular. I never necessarily thought it would, until I started hearing the word pop up in TV shows. And like, you know, now there was that one, I think that TV show on CBS, That revolved around a podcast host. And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. You know, now they're building actual shows about podcasts.
Really mainstream, down.
Yeah.
It's part of the culture.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I'm not surprised as much as, no, I take it back. I'm surprised at how mainstream it's become. You know, I always thought the medium had legs. You know, I never thought people like companies like, you know, Spotify and iHeart would park trucks full of money in front of people's houses to do a podcast. But you know, I always kind of thought it had legs. So I'm moderately surprised, I guess, is really kind of what I'm trying to say.
Let me ask you about the localization. And, you know, it's obviously what you're focused on there. So what, you know, how do you manage expectations like you were talking about? Not everybody's going to be Joe Rogan.
Right.
How do you manage those expectations? One, and what does success look like on the local level?
Yeah. Managing expectations is a trick because everybody wants to come out of the gate, you know, on fire with their first episode and get 500,000 downloads, and that's just not going to happen. The feeling around the industry right now is you need about somewhere between 15,000 to 20,000 listens per episode in order to monetize in any significant manner, and that's for a global podcast. I'm not sure there's any local podcast in Charlotte, ours included, that can reach that number, and that's in a 30-day window, right? Mm-hmm. So they want you to have 15,000 to 20,000 listens per episode in a 30-day window. And I don't think there's a local podcast that can do that, ours included. But a network of podcasts, and if you can develop, you know, tiers and sort of silos of programming, and if there's a company, a local company, like a local restaurant or, you know, a local hardware store that's trying to compete with the Home Depot, or something like that, that can advertise hyper-locally for a significantly smaller amount and knowing they're going to reach 1,000 or 2,000 dedicated listeners to a thing and spend a little bit of money per month, I think they would do that. Now, our efforts to make that happen got interrupted a little bit by COVID, but I still think that there's opportunities there at the local level to have some success. Mm. So to your question about how do you define success?
Yeah.
It's never, for us, it's never listenership. I don't look at the numbers that often. I look at the numbers maybe once or twice a month. A lot of other podcasters want to log into the data constantly and watch the numbers change and then right. they get all hung up on it. But you can't because you'll drive yourselves crazy. I mean, you guys know what
TV ratings are.
Welcome to my life. Every day.
It's kind of the same thing. I think you measure success by your own consistency. Are you able to continue to do it on a regular basis? My only golden rule is you got to be there when you say that you're going to be there. Mm. So if you're going to have a new show every Wednesday, you got to do that because our attention span as a society is so short. If you miss a week, you're going to lose a bunch of people. So, you know, success takes podcasting is a slow play, you know, and so it's going to take, you know, you're going to launch out of the gate, even this podcast, you know, you're going to launch out of the gate with a dozen listeners. And mm-hmm. it's going to be your mom and your family and your friends and everything, you know. And then
I don't even know they listen.
And then the second episode, you're going to get 18. Mm-hmm. And then the next episode, you're going to get 26. And the people, as they come and find you, they go back and listen to the old episodes. And so even the episodes from a year ago are going to continue to grow. So you've got to be patient. It's really, you know, lightning in a bottle if you come out of the gate with a brand new podcast with over 100 listens, you know. So measuring success is really kind of up to the individual podcast.
Hmm. We're talking to Brian Baltashevitz. He is the founder of the Queen City Podcast Network. He's the man who makes WBTV's Good Question, the podcast, happen. We're asking him about the podcast industry. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to ask him about the future of this industry.
If you are sick with COVID-19 or think you might have it, stay home except to get medical care. Monitor your symptoms. If your symptoms get worse, contact your doctor. get rest, and stay hydrated. Avoid public transportation, ride-sharing, or taxis. And take these 6 steps to protect others. Wear a mask over your mouth and nose if you must be around other people. Cover your mouth and nose with a tissue when you cough or sneeze. Clean your hands often with soap and water or use hand sanitizer, especially after coughing or sneezing. As much as possible, stay in a separate room and away from others in your home. Avoid sharing personal household items such as dishes, utensils, towels, or bedding. Wash these items thoroughly after using them. And clean all surfaces that are touched often, like counters and doorknobs, every day. To learn more, visit cdc.gov.
Okay, we are back now with Brian Baltashevitz, the founder of the Queen City Podcast Network. He's the man who makes WBTV's Good Question happen, and he also helps put together dozens of other podcasts that are based right here in the Charlotte area. Brian, wanted to ask you what you see as the future of podcasts. Do you think this is going to be something that is popular for a little while now?
Yeah, I think so. It seems to be kind of a critical time right now for podcasting, in that, you know, there's a lot of podcasters now who are at the top of the peak. You know, your Joe Rogans, your there's a bunch of other NPR is kind of a different thing, but there's a lot of companies right now throwing a lot of money at podcasting. And I think if it was anything else, I would be a little bit afraid for the smaller market than podcasters. But I think because it's so, I'm doing air quotes now, but it's so quote unquote easy to produce a podcast. And by that I mean it's not easy, but the barrier for entry is low, right? You know, you can record a podcast with your earbuds and that little microphone on the earbuds. You don't need, you know, a $5,000 studio with nice microphones and cameras and things like that, you know, to record something to be successful, as long as you've got something interesting to say. But I think that fact that you can have a voice, you can be heard. And depending on how you define success, if you define success by 500,000 downloads an episode, you're probably going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
If you define success by, you know, I've got something to say, I want people to hear what I have to say. If you're a local business, for example, and you were going to reserve a room at Dilworth Neighborhood Grill, that little room off the dining room. Mm-hmm. And every Wednesday at noon, you know, you were going to tell people about your business. And if 50 people showed up every Wednesday at noon to hear you talk about your business, you'd be thrilled, right?
True, yeah.
So for, you know, a local small business, podcasting can be that. You know, you can get 50 people a week to listen to you talk about what you do. And that's 50 hot leads every single week that are listening to your messaging or listening to you talk about spackling or, you know, just carpet cleaning or whatever it
right.
is. But, you know, so that's where podcasting can be particularly effective, is when you kind of drill down into those small little areas of interest, especially, you know, as a small business. So I think that podcasting does have legs. I worry about it at the top end. Your Conan O'Brien's, your Joe Rogan's, your NPR podcast. I worry that that's going to drive some people away from it.
Why would that drive people away, though?
I think because that sort of sets the standard, right? And then everybody wants to be Conan. You know, everybody wants to be Joe Rogan.
If they can't, they're going to say, why bother?
Right.
I see what you're saying.
Right. If I only have 100 listens a week, why would I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got 100 listens a week. You know, I tell local comedians that all the time. You know, if you had a room every Wednesday and you knew that, you know, 100 people were going to show up and hear you tell jokes, you'd be thrilled.
Yeah. Talk about when somebody comes to you with a podcast idea, what's that conversation, you know, like? Do you really look for a developed plan to this? Do you talk to them about their goals, really what they're trying to accomplish with it?
Yeah. I want to know what's their why.
Yeah.
Right. I want to know why you're doing this. Is it, and there's a whole bunch of answers that are perfectly legitimate whys, including I want to make money. It's a perfectly legitimate why. You're going to be disappointed. but that's a legit reason to want to do a podcast. I feel like the podcasts that are most successful are the ones where the answer to what's your why is, you know, I have this thing that I'm really passionate about and I really want other people to know about, and it's really cool and I have to talk about it, you know, or I want to help people. I want to inform people. And less so, you know, I want people to hear what I think about this, you know, because nobody really cares, honestly, what you think about whatever that thing is. It doesn't really matter.
But they're searching for a connection.
Yeah.
All that.
Yeah. And if it's, I mean, even like, you know, if I'm in my mom's basement and I'm talking passionately about some weird Norwegian death metal band that nobody's ever heard of, it's going to find an audience because mm-hmm. there's other people who are going to be interested in, you know, Norwegian death metal that are going to want to hear about this, you know, particular band or about, you know, your take on this particular thing. So I think any podcast that, you know, includes a person talking passionately about a thing has a path to success. Also, I want to know if you come to me and say, hey, you know, mm-hmm. I have a podcast I'm thinking about. I want to know you're serious about it. I want to know you're not going to
There's some work involved here, right? Yeah. It's not just sit down in front of the microphone and start yapping.
So much work, as you guys probably know. No, on most podcasts drop off after about 4 months. There's actually a name for that now. They call it pod fade. Huh. And so if you launch a podcast and think, oh, it's great, you know, I'm going to have a podcast. And then you realize it takes work and post-production and research and I got to book guests. And then, you know, I get to sit down and have the conversation, which is the fun part. Then I got to edit it. And then I got to tell people that this thing exists so people will find it. And it's the relentless self-promotion afterwards that tends to drive people away from having a I'm a podcast. The last statistic I saw from Apple was there's 225 million podcasts listed on Apple right now. It's grown by...
Wait, what was that number again?
225 million.
Wow.
So people have no excuse for a long car ride.
Exactly right. Yeah. A million of those have popped up since COVID, by the way.
Wow.
So COVID, it's babies and podcasts. That's what's come out of COVID. But so of that 225 million shows, only about 225,000 have released anything in the last 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, certainly there's, you know, a whole bunch of those shows that were limited runs. You know, we produced some shows for some clients here that we knew were going to be 8 episodes, and that's going to be it. But an even healthier proportion of those numbers are people who started and then they missed a week. And then once you miss 1 week, it's mm-hmm. easier to miss another week. And then pretty soon you've gone 3 or 4 months without doing it. And then you're like, oh, that's right, I had a podcast, you know? So it's a whole lot of work. So I really want to know that, you know, that you're committed to it. I want to know mm-hmm. that it's a thing that if you start this thing, you've got to stick with it. And after 4 months, you're not going to bail.
One of the big questions I get whenever we tell somebody about the podcast or just interview somebody for the podcast is, okay, now where can I listen to that? Where can I find that? And I tell them Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Yeah. Is the fact that now you have Spotify and Apple on board with podcasts in addition to music, do you think that has contributed to the rise in the industry?
I think so, yeah. And even still, I mean, there's literally, you know, thousands of places to listen to podcasts. And your podcast will be available even on platforms that you don't even know about, that you've never even heard of. They just find these things and they populate their own sites with your podcast so they can get traffic, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But even still, 90% of your traffic is going to come from Apple Podcasts. So 90% of your listeners are listening through Apple. And Apple is kind of the necessary evil in this industry, because it's just the go-to place. It's already on your phone when you buy an iPhone. So I steer people to Apple. You know, I steer people to Spotify or Stitcher if you're not an iPhone user. And then after that, just look wherever you can find a podcast. Even Amazon now is in the podcast game. So, you know, it's if you just say Apple and Spotify, you've covered everybody. But they'll still find it in other places.
Does it move into the digital landscape as a whole? So many, like, you know, I'm thinking like CNN Plus, right, is launching in fact, when we're recording, you know, this show. So all of these, you know, WBTV is, you know, in the, the digital space as well. Does that fit into that? How do you look at those two things? Do they marry it with each other?
I think so. I think it's, I think it makes sense for especially the larger media operations. I mean, Jamie, you remember several years ago, I tried to pitch a podcast to WBTV and we did one together.
We did one,
And
did pretty well.
It did. And, and it makes sense now, especially as, and please take this in the spirit in which it's intended, but particularly electronic news operations need to find the consumers.
Yeah. The audience is changing where you find them and where you meet them. Yeah.
Right. And your audience that watches, you know, on your side tonight at 7:30 with Jamie Bull is probably significantly older than maybe the ideal audience that the sales department at a TV station like WBTV wants, right? Local, especially local news operations need to find other ways to, and I think, and have always thought a podcast is a great way to do that because you can tell longer form stories. You can, I mean, the whole thing about a podcast is it's on demand. You can listen to it whenever you want. You can stop it. You can start it. Mm-hmm. You can take it in the car. You can take it when you're walking the dog, when you're working out, you know, whatever it is. So, kind of the beauty of that is the ability to have, you know, a thing that you created in the palm of your consumer's hands. And it's not like, you know, I know TV stations didn't get into the radio business or into the internet business, the print business, for that matter. But yeah, I think there's absolutely a connection between, you're no longer just a TV station, you're a digital media content creator.
Right.
And so why limit yourself to just, you know, what's on your air at any given time?
Makes sense.
You mentioned your concern about folks not wanting to start their own podcast because they realize that they're never going to be Joe Rogan or Conan O'Brien. Do you still see the industry lasting for a while, though, even with some of the big folks at the top generating most of the downloads and most of the listens?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go away. I mean, it's so easily consumable and so flexible and the content is so good. I mean, there's so many good podcasts out there and you know, I like to think that some of those are even ours. And I think there's always going to be a need and a desire for good content, you know, and good storytelling and good production values. And I think the bubble at some point will burst. And I think that number, you know, that 2.25 million podcasts on Apple will kind of slowly start to trickle down. Everybody can have a podcast, but maybe not everybody should. So that's kind of where we are right now. But I do think that will kind of settle out. And the podcasts that, you know, a year later still only have about 15 downloads are going to probably drop off a little bit. But it's still really early. I mean, it's weird to say that out loud because I've been doing it for 22 years now. But it's still, I mean, podcast has only been in the vernacular. The MP3 file has only been around for 15 years. So it still has, you know, a long way to go up. And I think it'll even out a little bit.
Before we let you go, what is the future of Queen City Podcast Network? Anything in the works right now or onward and upward?
So we've got one of the ways that kind of we've been able to sort of maintain what we're doing here is by sort of being flexible and not necessarily just focusing on podcasts. So we've done live streaming events over COVID for a lot of nonprofits as they kind of tried to figure out how to still have their fundraisers, even though we can't actually meet in the same room. And actually coming up, starting April 1st through April 17th, we'll be producing live programming out of the Shout Festival in Uptown Charlotte every single day, April 1st through the 17th. Two live shows a day, one at noon, one at 7 p.m. from the festival. And then we'll be launching the Shout Charlotte podcast at the festival as well. So stuff that, in addition to the podcast, that kind of as much as possible sort of keep our brand forward and keep, the idea that we're not just limited to podcasts, although that's, a huge part of what we do. But keeping out there, staying flexible, staying agile, and finding out where there's a need and hopefully filling it.
Jack, Jamie, any other questions for Brian before we let him go?
No, I'm rooting for you, man. Brian used to work at BTV in the day, and big fan, obviously, of everything that you're doing. And to, to take the leap of faith is not an easy thing to do. Yeah. So for you to do it and make a living at it is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. A leap of faith is one thing. This had never been done before, so this was this was an absolute leap without a net, and I can't. So much support, from friends at WBTV. I mean, I was there for 7 years. That's not a short. Compared to how long you've been there, it's a blink of an eye, Jamie. It was a significant part of, my career. And so the support, that I've always got from you guys, no one ever looked at me like I had two heads when I said, I'm going to go do this thing.
Yeah. No, we were rooting for you. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was great. But I love you guys. And that always meant a lot.
Well, we love you too. And we're thankful for everything you do for us and obviously helping us put together WBTV's Good Question. Brian Baltashevitz, founder of the Queen City Podcast Network. Thank you, sir, and thank you for shedding light on the industry.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
WBTV's Good Question is a product of WBTV in cooperation with Queen City Podcast Network and Balto Creative Media. From WBTV, Good Question is produced by Jack Vandertal. Special thanks to Jamie Bull. For the Queen City Podcast Network, WBTV's Good Question is produced by Brian Baltashevitz and Maria Delgado. Production coordinator, Taylor Robinson. It is recorded at the Queen City Podcast Network studios at Advent Coworking in Charlotte, North Carolina.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.